I want to talk to you for a half hour about MBK and your experience. I very much appreciated listening to you in the focus groups. A lot of schools people or superintendents either play it very safe or treat it like it's a program over here. Or there was one district where like the words were, you know, we're using this to reduce the achievement gap so that Black and brown boys, blah, 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 and create culture. And I thought, oh my God, because for you, it was like in your belly, in your heart. And for a lot of the community-based folks, it was like that, but not always the school-based folks. So can I ask you like four questions? I won't keep you beyond 3 o'clock. Is that all right? Thank you.
So
give us your name, your title, and how you identify yourself. Like what's important to you, identities, commitments, etc.
Sure. So I'm Dr. Edwin Quesada. You know, I'm the proud superintendent of the Yonkers Public Schools. Over close to 35 years in the field of education already. You know, if you ask me how I identify myself, I also would identify myself as a proud Latino immigrant who came to this country very well prepared academically, you know, with no English at all, you know, but, you know, just, you know, poverty was the... So ever-present in my life that the only way to come out of poverty would be through education, I guess. And my mother, who is a single mother with six children, you know, she created the conditions for schools to be a priority. I mean, I remember my mother telling me, I will work so that you can go to school. So I come home and I keep on working. She was an expert seamstress. My mother would make the most beautiful wedding gowns. I mean, that I would see. You would bring her a picture and she would recreate whatever was in, I don't know, what was the most popular magazine in Bazaar? Was there a magazine like that?
Maybe.
You know, I think so. And so I would always see those magazines in the house. You know, and all these ladies who were getting married, they would come to the house and they would select the dress. And my mother would just recreate the dress, you know, and it was just incredible to see my mother get up at 5 a.m. in the morning, go work for the Hensley Hotel, you know, as one of the ladies cleaning the rooms, I guess. I don't know what they call. I don't remember what they call. And then come home to cook for all of us, and then to sit in the machine, so, you know, which back in the day they were not electrical. Remember, I mean, so
yeah,
you know, I did see electrical machine come to my house at one point. I did see that, but then work until midnight, and then do it again for five consecutive days. So, you know, she did all that so that she could pay the rent, pay for food for us. So I knew that education was foundational to the work, and
What was her name? Is she still around?
Mom's still alive. Mom is 89 years old. Her name is Lucia. You know,
Quesada.
Quesada. Uh-huh. She's a precious being. Let me tell you one thing.
Is she?
Pain in the neck.
Yonkers?
No, she's actually. My mother goes back and forth between the Dominican Republic and the States. And right now she's in Connecticut with my sister, but Saturday she's heading back.
Mm-hmm. So you're from the DR?
I was born in DR, yes.
Mm-hmm. So funny, so many of the Latino MPK guys, when you press, it's Cuba.
So, oh yeah?
A pleasure to meet you. Yeah.
Oh, well, interesting.
Yeah. Funny. So tell me, how'd you get involved with MBK? Tell me a story about your involvement with MBK.
Well, MBK did not exist when I got into this business.
Right.
I mean, the concept of MBK you know, and, you know, respectfully to the former president, I mean, I was MBK way before the president was MBK, I have to be honest with you. Yeah, I remember, you know, I was assigned to be a building principal at Lincoln High School in Yonkers. It was an underperforming school with a 43% graduation rate. You know, and I remember telling the deputy superintendent, "You guys crazy? How can you assign me to be the principal of that school? I have only been a principal for 1 year. I was a principal at a middle school for 1 year. And I guess the work was so good at the middle school that they said, now we need you to take over this high school." Mm-hmm. And it was petrifying, to be honest with you, because of what I saw, because of the chaos that I saw in an institution that was supposed to be educating students.
Yeah.
So that was in 2004. So I had to come up with as many strategies as I possibly could to begin to transform the school. And the young people that were creating most of the chaos in the school were young men of color.
Mm-hmm.
So from the beginning of my education, graduating from high school on time to me was very important. So when I came to this country in 1983, I had already completed the 10th grade in the Dominican Republic. So I was in a state of chaos personally, because I felt that I was not going to graduate with my class, mm-hmm. and that all my friends in the Dominican Republic were going to be high school grad, and I was still going to be in high school.
Mm-hmm.
However, I worked very hard in those 2 years. And with the help of my counselor, I was able to graduate on time.
Mm-hmm.
So early on in my life, I realized that graduating from high school on time was so critical to the process. So here I am in this high school where there's nothing but chaos. And again, what I saw is that the young men of color were the one creating the chaos. Mm-hmm. So we started with the help of a community member to do empowerment assemblies,
mm-hmm.
you know, and we would bring all of the young men together into the auditorium. And the staff used to look at me like if I was crazy. You're gonna put all those young men together in an auditorium? And we speak about 500 young men,
mm-hmm.
maybe more, because I remember when I took over the school was about 1600 kids. Mm-hmm. So it was almost 900 kids in the auditorium, you know, and I would expect them to behave.
Mm-hmm.
So my work started there in 2005, 2006, 2007, doing empowerment assemblies, creating mentoring programs for students, for young men, particularly young men of color. I think I shared with you that at one point during one of the graduations, we are in the county center, and I'm seeing, and the students are coming in. So back in the days, they would line up the boys on one side and the girls on another side. So I'm observing, I was very attentive observing the marching.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was very striking to me to see that the young men were already in the aisles and the young ladies were still coming in. And it was one of those graduations that I said, there's going to be a time in my high school when the young ladies will be in the aisle and the young men will still be marching.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because there were more young men than young ladies, but yet there were more young ladies graduating than young men.
Yeah.
You know, so we worked toward that.
Yeah.
And we put in place initiatives to ensure that happened. You know, and I remember that we were able to accomplish that. And I had tears in my eyes during that graduation because I said, I have arrived as a building principal.
Mm-hmm.
And that graduating class, the valedictorian was a Dominican kid who was born in this country, and the salutatorian was a Black young man.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, you see, it is doable. It is possible.
Mm-hmm.
So my work began before the president. However, President Obama gave my brother's keeper a place in our society. He gave a real recognition. I mean, they don't know who Edwin Quesada is. So had I been the author of the initiative, no one would have paid attention. But when the President of the United States is putting the initiative in place and making it one of his signature post-presidency programs, sure, everyone is going to pay attention to. So
I can imagine your mother stitching into a wedding gown on the inside, my son Quesada developed, and it'll just be a secret.
It'll just be a secret, right? I agree. So that's what brought me to this work, because it was a natural, it wasn't anything new to me for the most part. Young men of color, I mean, in today's America requires special attention, simply stated. It's not whether we like it or not. It's not that we're gonna leave anyone behind. It's just they need special attention, because everywhere they go, there are forces working against them. And you know the concept of colluding very well. Mm-hmm. And I strongly believe that the institutions have colluded towards ensuring that young men of color do not have access to what they are so much entitled to. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, but you do whatever you want with that.
So when did you get involved with MBK?
This has to be our fifth year already, uh-huh. I believe.
Uh-huh. And what would you say are your major accomplishments, and where are their struggles? Because bringing it into the schools seems complicated. Some districts have gorgeous kind of capillaries in the community and subcontracts and Saturday programs and...
Let me answer to you this way. First of all, this concept of my brother's keeper existing outside of the school, to me, is not something that I comprehend. Mm-hmm. So I felt that it was very important for me to be involved from the beginning. Mm-hmm. We are the institution that captivates young people. We are the place where they come every single day. We are the place where basically they have no choice but to come. Mm-hmm. So for MBK to exist outside of the school, again, is not something that I subscribe to. Mm-hmm. Because our biggest accomplishment, I would say, is the concept of the chapter creation in school, where sort of like a fraternity exists in those respective schools for young men of color. You know, whether we like it or not, fraternities are very successful when they are run effectively and when the purposes are clear, that it is to elevate the life experiences of those members. So for me, biggest success is that MBK exists within our schools, that it is an integral part of the work that we do, that it is not something that the kids have to do outside of school, you know? So that's very important to me. I mean, when you think of accomplishment, you know, statistically, you know, we have graduated. We have maintained an over 85 graduation rate, on-time graduation rate, you know, the past 7-8 years, with the changes that have been done to graduation, we started that process way before that began to significantly increase graduation rate. And then our biggest struggle is bringing more men into this movement. And perhaps from my experience, is bringing Latino men into this movement. It's almost impossible to, it's difficult. It's so difficult to bring Latino men into this MBK movement, which is, I also don't think that that the powers that be have done a significant effort to bring them on board. You see, you know, I hope you respect this opinion and that you will not use this against me. But when you see all of the presentations, most of the presentations on MBK, the keynote speaker, the presenters are Black men for the most part. Nothing wrong with that. But it's just that New York State, the majority of the students are Latino and will be Latino. You know, so we have to figure out together as a state how to get more Latino men to be my brother's keeper.
Yeah. You know, so that has been my biggest struggle. I was talking to Ray Sanchez, who was saying a different version of what you're saying, which is that immigrant Latino kids don't see themselves in MBK, and that we kind of need an on-ramp for the immigrant kids up in Ossining, where I think there's a...
It's not an immigrant issue.
No.
It's Latino men for the most part.
That's interesting.
See, we are not, unless we went to college and we were part of a fraternity, we don't necessarily use the concept of brotherhood the way other subgroups use it.
That's interesting.
Okay. It's changing now. Now you'll hear me refer to other people as my brother, you my brother, you know, that kind of stuff. That's not a concept of and I don't have any research to validate what I'm saying. So that's going to be your job. But in the Latino world, the concept of brother, it's very sacred. You know, my brothers are my brothers, you know.
So it's family. It's not.
So MBK is a brotherhood.
Yeah.
So if you don't understand the concept of brotherhood outside of your family, it's a lot more difficult for you to get involved, I think. I mean, that's my own hypothesis, I would say.
And are there issues in bringing MBK into the schools, whether it's around curriculum or pedagogy or suspension policies? Are there policy issues that you have dealt with through this lens successfully, or where you encountered some resistance?
I'm very fortunate. I have encountered very little resistance from the leaders within the Yonkers community. They have embraced the concept of my brother's keeper in such a way that I am nothing but thankful and appreciative, from the mayor's office to my trustees to community leaders. Yes, so to me that resistance doesn't exist. But in terms of the question of policy, while doing my brother's keeper, we redid the code of conduct, where is a more restorative approach to disciplining students. The board approved an equity policy. What else? So many policies that we have looked at around because of my brother's keeper. My brother's keeper sort of center the conversation around diversity, equity, and inclusion.
I would say yes. I'm trying to frame that because you're not getting tons of money, any of you, but MBK legitimates a set of commitments that some of you were doing before, but also kind of insists on centering race, ethnicity, gender, and providing opportunities who are those placed most at risk from public institutions, whether it's cops or child protective services or schools. I have a foster son who's African American. So I know how entangled those systems are. And once you're in, it's very hard to, even if you've changed everything about yourself, once you're labeled in those systems, it's very hard to extricate. So MBK has really given a kind of legitimacy to encouraging changes in code of conduct, equity, diversity policies, restorative practices, yeah?
Sure, absolutely. But most importantly, it goes to what you were speaking about a few moments ago, which is we have worked to dismantle systems that are there to intentionally hold children behind. So, you know, I just made a phone call this morning to one of my departments here, and I did not recognize the young person that was picking up the phone. I said, "Who's this?" You know, he says, "Well, this is Tristan, Dr. Casado." I said, "Tristan, when did we hire somebody by the name of Tristan?" He said, "Dr. Casado, I'm one of your seniors. I'm one of your fellows." I said, "Well, Tristan, my fellow." You know, I mean, this was a young man that was very quiet, that, you know, I won't share much more about that, but, you know, that would not engage in a conversation with the superintendent of schools.
Yeah.
You know, and yet now he's in an office here, working, picking up the phone and engaging me in a conversation.
We've done all these, you know, focus groups, and the kids, you know, they start out like, "What does this lady want?" And then I turn to them and say, "So what have you learned?" And, "Oh, you're a mentor to younger kids. What do they think of you?" And these big smiles. And then they say, "I came out of my shell. A year ago, I never would have done this. I wouldn't have talked to you. I couldn't have, and I have brothers, and I know if I need something, I can ask people. And I know I can make a mistake."
That's what Fidel will tell you. Yeah. I'm sure that's what Fidel told you. But you know what? I just, you know, one of my fellows is now a sophomore at Howard. Huh. You know, so he sent me a text. I mean, yesterday. Yeah. His name is Joshua. You know, so I got to, you know, so him and I are going back and forth, and we're going to get together. And now, you know, I'm trying to figure out how do I get Joshua to come and speak to my administrators again, because he has spoken to them before, but. Just the fact that because of my brother's keeper, Joshua can speak to someone in my position, you know, as he deals with his second year of college, you know, and that he's willing to text me.
Yeah.
You know, it speaks to the fact that the goals of NBK, my goals of NBK, because my goals for NBK is only one for the most part, which is to create a network of support for young men. That's it. I mean, if you create a network of support of individuals that are willing to assist them, then it's okay. So I have to give him a call because I have to speak to him about doing some things. He's a phenomenal young man. I wish you can meet Joshua. You know, but he's another young man that was just out there going through the routines of high school.
Yeah.
You know, and I told, you know, Joshua wants to be a minister, I think. I said, "Joshua, no, I want you to be the president of the United States. You have all the tools.
Yeah.
To be the president or to be a senator, you speak so well, you are so eloquent." I mean, I said, no. "But nothing wrong with being a minister, but I want you to be the president, the senator. That's why I want you
to be Raphael Warnock."
Exactly.
Lots of possibilities.
I said, "Why not?"
I was going to ask you to end with a story, but the Joshua story is good enough. And it's 3 o'clock and you have to get back to much less pleasant things, I assume.
I you're probably right.
I thank you so much for your time, sir.
Please give David my best. Okay.
I will give David your best. Enjoy.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.